What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Friday, December 11th, 2020. Happy Hanukkah to you. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside one of the future class from the Game Awards 2020, Blessing Adeoye Jr.
What's up, Greg? Thank you.
So it's Kevin. Day two of being in the future class. Does it feel different? How, you know what I mean? Like, no? Okay.
Not at all. I was, when they said they wanted to add me to the feature class, I was under the impression that it would come with superpowers because there's like a similarity in name.
Thought how that would work, right? I mean, you just thought that's how it would work.
Yeah, because like feature class, days of future past, days of future class, you can see how those things will mold together. And so
exactly
when I learned that like I wasn't being granted any X-Men powers, I was very unhappy.
What was it like getting that call from Jeff Keighley though? I hear he rings you up.
He does not ring you up. No. I got the email. I was very excited though. Like, honesty, I'm very honored to be a part of that. It's really cool.
Well, we're super, super proud of you. You've had a great year.
Thank you.
Under not great conditions. You know what I mean? We try. We do our best around here, Kevin. But you know, we can only fight 2020 for so long before it all seeps in and gets to you.
Trying our hardest, pressing all the buttons.
Trying as hard as we can. I know. Exactly. There's a lot of buttons to press too. I'll tell you what, ladies and gentlemen. There's no time to waste. It's the day after the Game Awards, which means we have so much Game Awards stuff to talk about. But on top of that, we have NPD numbers for the month of November. So let's get into it, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, be part of the show. Patreon.com/KindaFunnyGames. Over on Patreon.com/KindaFunnyGames, you can give us your questions, your comments, your concerns, your squad up requests, and everything under the video game sun so that you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and get the show ad-free. You can get it with the exclusive post show we do, and you can just kick us a few bucks to say, hey, you're doing an all right job. If you don't think we're doing an all right job and want the game for the show for free, you can go to twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. You can watch us record the show live, just like PJ Julian, Big Bad Beluga, and Bizarre Monk are. If you are on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames watching live, you have a special job. Go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong and tell us what we screw up as we screw it up, so we can set the record straight for everybody watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, and listening on podcast services around the globe each and every weekday. Housekeeping for you. Yesterday, Andy streamed some of that Cyberpunk 2077, showing off ray tracing and all that goodness on his NVIDIA RTX 3080. He'll be doing it again next Tuesday, in case you missed it. Tuesday, December 15th. From 11 to 1 p. Pacific time, p.m. Pacific. 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. We crossed the thing. Blessing, you were on this yesterday.
I was.
You reviewed, of course, Cyberpunk for us. But, of course, your computer closer to a potato than this 380. How did it look?
It looks fantastic.
Thing? Yeah?
I'm rocking. Actually, Kevin can tell me what I'm rocking, because I always fuck it up every time. It's like an AMD GPU.
It's a Radeon something, you know?
Yeah.
It's a Radeon.
With an AMD inside it. Yeah, anyway, I was running the game on ultra settings, like on the highest settings I could possibly do, and seeing Andy run it even on stream just in itself looked incredible. Like, I was very jealous that I couldn't run it with ray tracing and DLSS.
Understandable. I get that.
Yeah. It looks crisp.
Okay. I'm playing on PS5, you know, but really a PlayStation 4 version. So what the fuck do I know?
How's that running?
I mean, not knowing any better, it runs great. I've crashed twice, maybe three times, but like, you know, It's Cyberpunk. There's glitches and stuff. Like, there's, you know, little visual bugs. But I haven't had anything game-breaking, nor have I had anything, you know, that I would say has ruined the experience. I'm running into a lot of what you talked about in your review, where it's like, I don't know, Jackie, what should we do?
Pause. Yeah.
Well, V, it's like, okay, well, all right, let's get it tighter here. I understand. This is ruining the momentum of this story I'm on right now, which I'm enjoying.
Awesome.
I to give you context, nobody else, you'll understand this. I'm very early, obviously, in the game, right? But I just took my first pill yesterday, where I had something happen and it was like, I gotta take a pill to try to quell this. That was it. And I was like, well, so the story's like, really good.
You're pretty far in then. Like
5.5 hours.
You're 5.5 hours. So hours? Have you been mainlining it so far?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, even the side, it was early on, it was like I had a breather and it was very much like, all right, I'll meet you at the bar later. You know, come there when you want to do the thing. And I was like, all right, I opened up the side missions. And I was like, okay, let's try one of these. And I was like, oh, pay the guy off that, you know, gave you your, helped you out in the beginning, the Ripper Doc. I was like, oh, he was cool. So I went over to pay him and he's like, oh, I still don't have the money. I was like, oh, well, that would have been helpful to have in the quest. I don't know how much I owed you. I didn't realize I still was broke. Okay, cool. And then there was another one where it's the one I've seen people sharing around of, you know, friend of the show, Jesse Cox is in there as a guy who has something wrong with his pee-pee. And I ran into him on the street, drove him over to the place. And then it was still like, all right, I'll talk to you later. I'm like, all right, well, I'm just going to get back to the main quest since I'm not, I just got to wait for you to call me, I guess, or whatever. But it's what you're talking about where I think the main quest is very interesting so far. It's pulling me through where it is like, fuck, I want to see more of what's going on there. So yeah, I'll see what happens.
And I think there's like a point maybe once you get out of the prologue and like, it feels like everything opens up even more. I think that's when side quests become a bit more interesting and more involved.
The last night was the night where I got to the, I guess the MacGuffin of, or the kicker of like, okay, this is what people were talking about and what you were talking about in your review of like, there is a clock. There isn't a literal clock, but there is a clock of like, what is motivating V to move through his story fast.
Yeah.
And so last night when I discovered that, I was like, oh yeah, I can totally see where it'd be like, help me do this stupid. Fuck you. I don't have time for you. I got to do something. I got problems right now. All right. Don't worry about me. Excited to get back to it today. Also, shout out to Numbskull. This is a Numbskull Christmas sweater. It's, I guess, hashtag Christmas sweater day. This is an old PSX one. They sent me a new one this year that I've worn already on the show, but I saw people in the chat talk about it. But this is my old PSX one. Numbskull.com probably to get it. A whole bunch of Christmas sweaters. But I digress. They're not a sponsor. Don't listen to them. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Blackjack, and our real sponsors, Quip, Trojan, and BetterHelp. But I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. Whoa, Arizona, Kev. Three items on the Roper Report.
A baker's dozen.
Now, I say three and you think, oh, man, what a light news day. I assure you we are going to be here quite some time because I broke Game Awards into two things and then we got the MPD thing. So let's start from the top with number one. The Game Awards were last night, Blessing. Outside of honoring you, which they spent 30 to 40 minutes on, just showing photos of you and talking about OKB.
Very shocking, because there are 50 feature class people listed, and for some reason they spent 40 minutes on me and like 2 seconds on each of the other ones.
Well, it's like when you get trail mix and you have your favorite piece in the trail mix. That's the one you think about and talk about. Mm. You don't worry about the raisins. Yeah,
you don't think about the pretzels.
No. You get all this crap out of there. It's all about that one thing that's like a Cheez-It but isn't a Cheez-It.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I know exactly what I mean? You know what I'm talking about.
That thing's great. Gosh, we should learn its name because it's so good. But what do I know? So I want to start with, let's do announcements. Obviously, ladies and gentlemen, there were a bajillion announcements at Game Awards last night. There are rundown articles everywhere. I want you all to know that I am completely cheating on today's episode and keeping IGN's The Game Awards 2020 every game announcement. It is a chronological piece written by Felicia Miranda that goes through and does everything. And so I thought we could just read this. Obviously, I think most of us watched it, but I thought it would be even better, Bless, if we each did our five highlights to come up with the 10 best things we think that happened at the Game Awards last night. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
Like, these are the things, they're not the best. They're the things that excited you the most. We'll do awards after this. This is just the announcements and stuff that if you missed it there. And so I want to start with Open Roads. If you didn't see this, this is the Fulbright game. Of course, people who did Gone Home, Tacoma, a friend of the show, Steve Gaynor, right? Last night, they didn't even bother telling me ahead of time. I had no idea it was coming. They announced Open Roads. In Open Roads, players will experience the story as 16-year-old Tess Devine on a road trip with her mother, Opal, to discover what has been left behind in evocative places forgotten to time. Together, they'll explore a series of long abandoned family properties, unearthing a mystery much darker than either of them imagined. Opal and Tess's relationship has never been easy, and in their search, they'll discover not just the truth they've been seeking, but each other. Caitlin Dever voices the role of Tess, and Carrie Russell voices the role of the mother, Opal. The trailer they showed, really beautiful, looked, I thought, like animated series, graphic novel kind of feel to it in terms of what it looked like as it played out. And it looked like, they're going after, like, their grandmother had, like, a secret life. Might have been a bank robber or something. She had this, like, journal, and she moved a page, and there was a hidden key. And I was like, fuck yes. Yeah. Fuck yes. From Fulbright, awesome. The people who did Gone Home, it's a coma. They're going to tell me a story about this crazy-ass family and all this shit's going on there. Let's fucking go.
Yeah, so, I like how different it looks from their other games, because if you were to tell me that Fulbright was announcing or revealing a game at the Game Awards, I would have expected a walking sim that was like, hey, go through this you know, it was a house in this game. It was a spaceship and took over, right?
Yeah.
This time you're gonna walk through an abandoned ship or something and like learn the story here and learn how everything went wrong, everything went right. Like, and I like that them announcing this game, right, is them taking a pivot and being like, hey, we're gonna stick to what we do best, which is telling stories and telling
narratives,
narratives that have layers that you can peel back and go beyond like the big action stuff, right? It is us getting a feel of characters and emotion and all this stuff. I'm glad that they're doing that in a way that is, hey, you know, maybe it ends up being a walking sim, who knows, but it is a completely different style.
Oh, it will be
gotten from them before.
I think it's gonna be I think it's cool that you have the two the mom and the daughter, so you're talking to somebody, but I do think it's gonna be you investigating the house. Kevin, I highlighted at the top of this article number one here the Felicia Miranda at IGN. If you click on that, you can go to that page and maybe control F as we talk about some of these games. I don't know if you want to play trailers or whatever, but just so there is visual. My prediction on this is that it's going to be a mashup of basically Gone Home and then what Remains of Edith Finch, right? Of shoving those together and having it be you have a partner in crime as you go through this thing and start talking about it and finding items and be like, mom, what's the story behind this? And she tells you the thing and how that related to your grandmother, and then trying to find secret passages and get it all connected that way. Like, that sounds dope and I'm all about that, obviously, but I'm a Fulbright fanboy and I'm not afraid to say it, Steve. Oh, Kevin's tossing up the trailer right now. Good job, Kevin.
I like the evolution too that we've gotten of walking sims over the last decade, because it did start off with games like I want to say like Talos Principle, and then we get into Gone Home, which I think really was this eye-opening moment as far as, oh snap, like this is a really good narrative within this game that is short but touching. I like that we've gone from that and then like got games like What Remains and games like Firewatch and games like even like low-key games like Virginia and other games like that, right? Like,
the
evolution we've gotten of walking sims over the years, I think has been awesome to see. And yeah, if this is also a walking sim, then this looks like it's going to be a very fun, or like a very very cool a very cool step in terms of style and what they're doing with like just the setup and the performers, right, having Kerry Russell in the game. But yeah, in terms of like the art style, that seems to be the thing that they're really pushing for in this game.
100%. And I think it's going to exude style and, you know, be all about that. The game is set to launch 2021 for PC and consoles. Blessing, these aren't ranked, obviously. We're just shouting out the things we loved from last night. What speaks to you?
I'm going to talk about Season. Season was the game that was announced by Scavengers Studio. And in their lead up to the game, right, they described it like this. It's a third-person atmospheric adventure bicycle road trip game. Through the eyes of a young woman from a secluded community, explore the world for the first time. Collect artifacts and memories before a mysterious cataclysm washes away the world. And it seems to be a game that is about exploration and a bit of like archaeology, which seems to be cool. The reason why I want to shout this game out is, one, the art style looks fantastic. Like the actual trailer itself, I posted it on Twitter and there were quite a few replies being like, oh, I thought this was like a movie or a cartoon.
Yeah, it does. It looks like an animated movie, right?
Yeah, and it looks incredible. But then also Scavenger Studios, the same studio that put out Darwin Project, and that's been their battle royale that they've been trying to make work for the last few years. At the beginning of this year, they put it on PlayStation, and I played it for our 104 PSN games ranked. And I was already interested in that game just because I remember seeing it revealed at E3's prior and having an interest in it because it looked cool. You know, the whole idea of it was this more Hunger Games style. You are in this arena with like 10 other players, and there is a director, and they're messing around with the arena that you're playing in, and you're doing like a lot of scavenging and a lot of different like more involved ways of trying to survive in the smaller arena. And like the game was really fun. The game was really fun, but it didn't necessarily speak to a larger audience. And so they put out a blog post that I kind of want to get into because I think it's interesting, and it starts off a bit sad, but then gets into what I think is a bit inspiring. Okay. They posted this blog in June 12th, 2020, where they talk about Scavenger Studio is expanding. They write, "Dear Darwin Project fans and gaming enthusiasts, I'm Simon Darveau, creative director of Darwin Project and co-founder of Scavenger Studio. I have a bunch of news to share with you, some of which may sound surprising or even strange without context. I've decided to give you a bit of insight, some perspective on the big picture. Darwin Project was not financially viable. The video game industry is structured in projects, each each with its own partners that invests upfront in exchange for a percentage of future revenues. As the scope of Darwin Project grew, so did the portion we had to share with investors, up to the point that it was not viable for the company to continue investing in it. Even though Darwin Project did not reach the commercial success we had envisioned, the game has undeniably proven to the industry several things. First, we were able to ship a game that rivals AAA productions on an indie budget. Second, we were able to play and deliver using the most advanced technologies, even pushing the boundaries on this front. Third, we built a team and a company and delivered the game in record time. Finally, we have demonstrated our agility and ability to build new licenses from scratch and deliver solid products based on entirely original creative direction. So while we ran out of money to pursue the development of Darwin Project, we found financial partners who believe in our team and in our studio's potential. They want to support us and give us a chance with new projects opportunities. Then they talk about how Scavenger Studio is expanding. And they talk about, here they say, I believe that the video game industry is great, it's doing well, yet I feel like it could be so much better, so much greater. We barely scratched its potential, and yet it is currently dominated by tropes, formulas, and business opportunity-driven projects. Don't get me wrong, I believe in monetization, business, and profit. These are vital aspects of any game project. Not succeeding in them is what cost me the development of Darwin Project. However, I believe that these ideas should be part of the project instead of being its very core. In my opinion, what should be the core of any project is strong creative vision, a flaming intuition, a need to change and disrupt, a different perspective on the universe, a need to push boundaries and to redefine the world. So beside having my own upcoming project, another goal I wish to accomplish is to create a space for the most talented creators who have something powerful and unique to express. He goes on about similar sorts of things, right? Talking about wanting to be able to, like, you know, see more talent, see more passion, see more vision be at the heart of things as opposed to just pure, you know, financial motivation, which I think is awesome. And then he talks about how, yeah, we have one studio now or one team now working on season and another team now working on a different game. But I love this idea that through Darwin Project not being financially viable for them and not living up to what they needed to be financially, then births these two new ideas, right? One being season, which is a thing that is, hey, like, we learned so much from the failure of Darwin Project, and we're able to take that and put it into a project that still has the same level of, this is what we want to do, this is creative, this is something that we feel like is going to push the medium, but it's also something that we think is going to be viable and something that we're going to be able to work on with the learnings of what happened with Darwin Project, which I think is a really cool thing.
I think, again, it's what you don't see enough of in the industry is the real explanation to the audience of the nuts and bolts of it. You know what I mean? Where it would be simple, I think, for audience pundits, whoever, looking about, oh, Darwin Project, that was a failure, and like the studio sucks or whatever, because, you know, how many people played Darwin Project? Like, obviously you did, but how many other people did, and how many people know that the game was good? And I know about the Darwin Project being good and that you enjoyed it so much because you played it. And without that, I think you just get the fact that it's a failed game. It's a game that came out and didn't do what it was supposed to do and went away, and so you go, oh, well, I don't know if that studio is anything worthwhile, right? But you look at fucking season right now, you look at this trailer, and I don't know if the game's going to be good. The premise is fascinating. I think the premise is really incredible. I think the art style is incredible. I think they've got a vibe to it that you're like, yeah, hell yeah. And so to have them come out and explain, right, go beat by beat of like, this is what it is and this is how it built and this is where we're going and this is why it's something, I think that's incredible. And I think it's inspiring too. Like, even that blog post, to talk, you know, to talk about your failures is something people don't do enough of, period, let alone in this industry. And I think it's funny, you know, you have the blog post you just read, Bruce Straley, who of course used to be over at Naughty Dog, of course, you know, co-did Last of Us, the original. He put up the trailer today too, right? He quote tweeted it and put, 32 minutes ago, and said, thank you, Scav Studio, for this, at Scav Studio. And then he responds to his own thing. Sometimes I get so tired of our industry. This trailer gave me a little hope this morning. Now the next trick, parentheses, we developers have to perform is making it all come together, which is like trying to fly a brick to the moon while performing Shakespeare. Godspeed, Scavenger Studios.
Yeah. Like, it almost reminds me of Housemarque in a way, where I remember reading the blog post from Housemarque where they put
Arcade
out...
Arcade is dead.
Yeah, Arcade is dead, right? After putting out, like, a full slate of fantastic arcade-style games from Resogun to Nex Machina and everything in between, right? Like, I'm not going to go through and name all their games, but they put out a large slate of games on PlayStation throughout the course of the generation. And they're a fantastic studio, but they came down on the same conclusion that, hey, we can't keep making these types of games because you guys aren't buying them. And like, they're not financially viable for us. And so for them, the move was to pivot to making something that was more AAA, and they started to get into making their Battle Royale before they partnered with PlayStation to then start working on Returnal, which Returnal looks awesome. I'm very down for that game. I think that game is going to be really cool, and I'm sure that's more of what they would want to do compared to, or not necessarily what they want to do, because I'm sure they wanted to make the Battle Royale also, but
like, you look at Returnal and you go, oh, that gameplay looks great. And that's what I think you think. When I think of Housemarque, oh, sure, I mean, I think of everything they've done and how incredible their games are, but I think of the gameplay first is where I always go with them.
Exactly. And Returnal seems like it is going to be a little bit more true to Housemarque than the Battle Royale that they were making. And so I love to see indie studios take charge of their own future, or not even take charge, but be able to express themselves in a way that doesn't feel totally hinged on, fuck, we gotta stay afloat, fuck, we gotta figure out how to make money, because all the stuff that we want to do and all the stuff that we're passionate about just isn't doing it for us because you guys aren't buying it. And so to see Scavenger Studio figure out how to do that, or figure out a way to pivot in a way that is going to keep them afloat, and also see Housemarque make those partnerships happen, you know, so they can make a game that looks awesome, right, in order to stay afloat, I think that stuff is awesome.
Next one for me is the Callisto Protocol. This is caught me completely off guard. If you follow me on social media, which you should, Game Over Greggy, huh? I got a big package. Not what it would have been. I got a big package. Period. There's a quote for you. I got a package, a huge, huge package from Striking Distance Studios on Wednesday, right, the day before the Game Awards. This is giant Yeti cooler. It had a bunch of booze in it. It had drinks. It had a drink menu for what to make their thing, and. Striking Distance Studios is one of the PUBG like banner studios or whatever. So and everything in the thing said, like, you know, penitentiary. It was all like, you know, in basically like, think of like Lost, how the beer just said beer and had like Dharma Initiative on it. It all looked like that, like it was from a penitentiary. And so I thought it was going to be some other battle royale shooter, whatever the hell it was going to be. And I was like, all right, cool. I don't know if I'll be into the game. And then as you're watching the trailer right now, when this started up yesterday and we immediately saw what looks to be like what you would imagine the HUD of the game to be on the back of this guy's neck, I was like, oh my God, Dead Space. And that's when it all clicked, of course, is like, you know, Glenn Schofield, who was most recently making Call of Duties over at Sledgehammer. He's, you know, half of the team that made the original Dead Space with Michael Condrey, right? Or half of the leadership team. And so like when he broke off and started his own studio with some of the other people, like Steve, who've worked on Dead Space before too, I didn't pay much mind to it. You know, you gotta wait to see what the game's actually gonna be. But watch this fucking trailer for the Callisto Protocol and have it be like so goddamn Dead Space. Like, if it's gonna be a spiritual successor to fucking Dead Space, it's launching 2022 Xbox Series X, PlayStation 5, and PC. From the press release, this is what the official thing reads, right? Set on Jupiter's moon Callisto in the year 2320, the Callisto, and am I pronouncing that right, Kevin? Callisto?
Callisto, right?
As I'm saying it right. All right. Callisto Protocol is a next generation take on survival horror. The game challenges players to escape the maximum security black iron prison and uncover its terrifying secrets. A blend of horror, action, and immersive storytelling, the game aims to set a new bar for horror in interactive entertainment. Fuck yes. Are you kidding me? God damn. That was always the thing where, like, I was happy to see Glenn and Michael go to Sledgehammer. Obviously, make great Call of Duty games, just not my kind of games that I care about or whatever. But to see Glenn go here now, start a studio, and fucking make a spiritual successor to Dead Space because EA won't make Dead Space anymore, fuck yes, let's go. Awesome. Like, I can't wait for that fucking game. And again, 2022 is what they're targeting, so we'll see what's going to be when we get there. That's a ways out, but goddamn, I love it. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, this is really cool. Like, the cinematic trailer, I think, did a really good job of setting the tone. And also, like, selling us on the idea that, hey, this is Dead Space. We're not going to say it out loud, but you know,
of course, what this is. Yeah. You when you see the thing on the back of their neck, you're like, okay, that's going to be your HUD, and that's how we'll know if we're alive and how you'll build off of that. Yeah.
What are the two or three things that you feel like this game needs to nail in order to be amazing at what it's trying to be?
I think it needs to be what Dead Space was, and that's subvert your expectations. And I think that was always the, you know, did you play Dead Space? Did you love Dead Space?
I didn't love Dead Space. So I played like a bit of Dead Space 3, which I think is the one that people would say not to play. Then I also played like a Dead Space mobile game, and I also played the Dead Space game on Wii. That was like the
Why did you do all these
I played
things?
All the Dead Space games that I probably didn't like I probably shouldn't have played.
So like to dial it back to when Dead Space came out, right? Like Dead Space was fantastic for a number of reasons, obviously. Story and visuals and setting, but it was also that like it was one of those games where you're like, I'm playing it. There's a grate and a skittering over there. So clearly that's where the monster is going to come from. And then it would come from somewhere completely different or not come at all. It was that, all right, cool. I have these. What I loved about it is you're Isaac Clarke. You were this engineer on a space station. You were not this military dude. You were not this guy who was like knew everything. You were using your engineering tools like to fix ships. You were using it to fight these monsters. And part of that was that the monsters you would think to shoot them in the head, that wasn't it. You had to dismember them. That's how these necromorphs went down and stuff. So there's all these different things that you took the idea of what you would think to do in a horror movie, and they didn't do that. They tweaked it in a different way. And I'll never, like, for me, it'll always be Dead Space 1's memory of trying to get across this giant area with all these catwalks and having just this, you know, your HUD was on your back, so you had, like, your spine was your health. And it was like, I was down super low on red, and I knew I was getting close to the checkpoint. And I was like, it's one of those where, you know, the checkpoint's got to be across this whole thing. And I remember coming up the stairs of the catwalk, and there was a necromorph laying there on the ground. And they always laid on the ground, and then they'd pop up and get you. And it was that thing of, like, psyching myself up for, like literally a minute. I'm like, fuck, how am I going to do this? Because even if he pops up, I'll have that fraction of a second. If I cut this way, and, like, that terror of one enemy, just one, being there in this one section that I couldn't get around. And then it was the thing I'm talking to you about of like, traditionally, that thing's going to pop up and get me. But this game doesn't play that way. So is he really going to pop up and get me? Or is it going to be... And it was just like, to sit there and have that kind of moment about one enemy in a game, it really made it feel like a survival horror slash action game in an interesting way. Survival horror was all Dead Space 1, but you still had guns and stuff, but... Dead Space 2 got to be more action, which I enjoyed more, but I know a lot of people took away from it. I also love the fact that Dead Space 2 opens up with Isaac Clarke in a mental institution, because clearly all of this shit would fuck with you to no end. Loved it. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, Dead Space 3, I fucking hated it. I was like, whoa.
Did he pop up?
Oh, the guy there? Mm-hmm. No, he didn't, but it was somebody else. Like, it was the normal thing of he did it, and then I went 3 more feet, and somebody came up over the side of the scaffolding, and I had to run. That was the other thing, too. They had such great pacing where you always had, it was that what you need a survival horror game to do, right? Where I always felt like I was about to die, but I never, you oftentimes didn't. It wasn't like you pay, like the old days on a PS2 or PS1 game where you'd paint yourself in a corner where you're like, well, fuck, I need 2 rations. I only have one. There's no way I'm going to get through this thing. How do I do this? It was always that giving that feeling of you are completely vulnerable. You're going to die, but you probably are going to get through. But you, it was like a haunted house, right? Where you feel like you're in danger, but you're not.
Exciting. Close to project.
Can't wait.
My second one that I want to shout out as a highlight for me is Sephiroth coming to Smash. This is a very, like, this is obviously the one that when they announced it got the pop from us because we were all not expecting. And yeah, like, as somebody who likes Smash and as somebody who this year got very into Final Fantasy VII Remake and a bit into the original Final Fantasy VII, like, this is one that caught me way off guard and got me very excited, both from, like, the badass standpoint of Sephiroth cutting Gleam in half in the trailer, but then also the fact that they're able to get Sephiroth in the game period, because I know through getting Cloud in the game, it was very obvious that Square Enix didn't want to share a lot of the Final Fantasy VII wealth in terms of the soundtrack, in terms of like all the assets and stuff. Like, it was very much Cloud's in the game, here's 2 songs, here's a stage, that's all you're getting. The fact that
I was wondering what you meant by that, like, because as this is all popping off last night, obviously I stepped back, let you guys have it because you're these dorks. But when I watched after the fact, you know, we had a whole bunch of great social breakouts put up, I think, by Barrett. Great job, Barrett. And one of them was where you're freaking out about this and you go, but Square, they don't play nice. And I was like, what does that mean? I don't understand what that means.
Yeah, no,
so this is what it is.
Yeah, for Cloud, like, they just didn't let like, you know how with DLC characters in Smash, right? Like, you get a billion songs in the game whenever a new character is introduced from a new series. Like, when we got Joker from Persona 5, they added in Persona 3 and Persona 4 stuff. Like, that is how awesome the collaborations have been in Smash, and that's how good Sakurai and Nintendo are about trying to go all the way in terms of introducing new main characters into the Smash roster and really giving those characters the space to shine. And Cloud didn't really have that. Like, it was awesome to get Cloud, and it was awesome to get some songs and get the stage and all that stuff, but Cloud did not have that same fanfare. And it was very obviously because Square Enix didn't want to give up all that Final Fantasy VII had to offer. And so getting Sephiroth to me was surprising, because I just didn't think that Square Enix would give anything else from Final Fantasy VII. Gotcha. And this means that we're going to get more music. And I think this kind of opens the door to, all right, are we going to get all the Final Fantasy VII stuff that we didn't get the first time around, which I think is really exciting.
Hell yeah. I added this to your thing here, right? More, this is from Nintendo this morning. More information about Sephiroth will be revealed in a special video dedicated to the upcoming fighter on December 17th at 2 p.m. Pacific. So correct me if I'm wrong, that usually means that he's released that evening, right? So like December 17th evening, you should be playing Sephiroth?
Probably, yeah. And they said in the trailer, I think they said December. And so
they did say December. They did say December 2020 for him, yeah. Yeah.
And so this all makes sense.
My next one, my third thing that I thought blew my skirt up and made me go, oh yeah, it was Back 4 Blood. Back 4 Blood, the creators of Left 4 Dead, Turtle Rock, fully revealed Back 4 Blood, a first-person zombie shooter with co-op. It's launching in June 2021. Alpha is next week, though. Back 4 Blood can be played online with a squad of 4 players or solo with up to 3 AI teammates. The game will also support up to 8 players in online PvP, person-versus-person multiplayer. The story takes place after a catastrophic outbreak where most of humanity has either been killed or infected by the parasitic devil worm. Hardened by unspeakable events and emboldened to fight for the last of humanity, a group of apocalypse veterans called the Cleaners have rallied to take the infected horrors known as the Ridden and reclaim the world. It is just Left 4 Dead. And as I said last night watching this trailer, don't overthink it. Just make another Left 4 Dead. Again, you don't want to make more Left 4 Deads, Valve? That's fucking fine. The creators of Left 4 Dead Turtle Rock will go make it on their own. And I am all about that. And it's funny, too. For Back 4 Blood, you know, yesterday before Game Awards, Imran and I just mentioned this because we were talking about how J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot had just picked up one of the other Left 4 Dead creators and was having them do stuff over there. And we were talking about how Back 4 Blood had been announced forever ago, but we hadn't heard anything. Now we do. June 2021. Alpha is on PC next week. You can register for it right now. I did. That's how much I'm into this game, blessing. That I'll register for an alpha for the PC. Well, I was bitching to Andy about it, that I didn't want him to play it because I didn't want him to, you know, get tired of it or something. He's like, why don't you just get it and we play together? And I was like, no, I guess that makes sense. I got this PC.
Dude, I mean, I might sign up for it.
Let's go, Bo.
If you guys are going to do it.
Kevin, you want to be the fourth? You, me, Andy, and Blessing.
Yeah, we're Back 4 Blood boys. There's some website?
Yeah, I'm going to get it for you. Hold on. Yeah. I mean, you could Google it probably, but I'm sure I have it in the press release.
Left 4 Dead?
Drop that in the Slack.
No. Don't sign up for Left 4 Dead. Left 4 Dead, you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. That's not the one you want to go to. Sign up. You want to go to backforblood.com, but back 4 with the number 4, blood.com.
Because like Left 4 Dead, Back 4 Blood, 4-player co-op.
They're saying June 22nd for this release. June 22nd, 2021.
Kevin gets it.
Can't we just tell them we want to play? And that, like, doesn't that usually work?
Yeah, we can do that. But if you just register, I don't think they're going to like cut it off. I mean, they want as many people in here as they can.
Oh, they're asking for internet. Yeah,
I don't think there's like a lottery thing.
Yo, Steam. Ugh.
I know, right? Oh, PC game.
What's going on?
Create a web. He wants to go outside. He didn't. It doesn't matter. He's totally fine. He's being an asshole.
Kevin, flick a cigarette at him. Teach him a lesson.
Oh, no, don't do that.
Don't do that. I was kidding. Yeah, I fucking can't wait. I love Left 4 Dead. I understand that, like, I saw a lot of people look at this last night and go, oh, just more Left 4 Dead? I'm like, yeah, that's all I want. Left 4 Dead was a great time to hop in for a couple hours, kill a bunch of zombies, toss around shotguns and machine guns and go kill things. Let's see what you got, Back 4 Blood. I'm all about it. Bless, what's your next pick?
I want to talk about Nier Replicant version 1.22474487139... The trailer for this looked awesome. If you're unfamiliar, Nier Replicant is this version of Nier Replicant is basically a remake of Nier Replicant that came out in 2010 in Japan only, and it's basically the prequel to Nier Automata, or the alternate version of a different Nier game. I think Nier Gestalt. I've not played any of the Nier games before Nier Automata. I really love Nier Automata, and so this seems like a great jumping in point if I want to experience that Nier Gestalt / Nier Replicant. And it looks awesome. I'm surprised by how much it looks like Nier Automata. And that gets me really excited because I love the art style of Nier Automata. I love what they did with the characters. I love the combat system. And things about this combat system look very similar, and especially when you see the orbs coming at you. Like Nier Automata had a lot of that. And so
a lot of orbs in Nier Automata.
A lot of orbs, a lot of bullet hell stuff, slash hack and slash stuff. And this seems like it's going for all of that. And so, again, very excited about this. This trailer, I was already sold. This trailer double sold me. And so, and it's coming out, what, I think it was just on screen.
April 23rd.
April 23rd. And so, soon. Very excited about it.
Good. My next one here is, this is where you start getting to, I think, the slam dunks you expect. But Perfect Dark's trailer, I thought, was really well done. I can't wait to see what the initiative has, period. You know, Drew Murray is a industry friend from all the Insomniac stuff we did back in the day. Like, I'm excited to see what this team has up their sleeves. I think that, you know, as a Perfect Dark N64 fan, like, I still have that amount of nostalgia to it where that name means something. I didn't care, obviously, about Perfect Dark Zero like everybody else. But I'm stoked to see what they do with this. You know what I mean? I think, you know, we talk about all the time of, like, Xbox studios know what they need to do. They know they need to come out. They know they need to deliver. So if you get to take Perfect Dark, and I think you watch the trailer as Kevin is right now, right? Like, you know, the polar ice caps have melted. Everything's going to hell. The world's falling apart. Like, what's the story you want to tell with Joanna Dark there about this? And where do you want to put her, and what do you have her doing? And how much secret agent stuff is there? Like, I can't wait to see what they come up with. I just think, you know, I mean, this is just a teaser. There's, like, nothing to it other than this drone's going through doing it, and then Joanna at the very, very end. But I'm stoked.
Yeah, same. I'm right there with you. Like, this is one of the trailers that really stood out to me. Obviously, because it's the initiative and also Perfect Dark, right? But I think it does do a good job of setting the tone and making it feel like this big new thing, you know, quote unquote new. Perfect Dark is still one of those games that, like, it's ranked very high on Metacritic. Like, it has, like, a 97 on Metacritic. It's one of the highest ranked games of all time.
This is, you're talking about 64?
64, yeah. And, like, I always forget about the love and fervor people have for Perfect Dark. Like, Perfect Dark is beloved in a way that I don't think really hit me until, I think I mentioned it on a show one time, and then, like, thought about it, and I was like, oh, yeah. And, like, looked through, like, comments and stuff, and I was like, sure. Oh, people love Perfect Dark, and I just didn't realize it. And, like, you know, I like Perfect Dark. I like playing it back in the day, but them bringing back is obviously, like, a good idea, you know, like, bring back this thing that's beloved, and putting it front and center as this initiative project, which you are touting as one of your big studios now, one of the biggest studios you have is Microsoft now.
Yeah.
I think it's going
to a studio they keep setting up to be, like, their Sony Santa Monica.
Exactly.
And they, maybe we're putting that on them. Probably we are more than anything, but that's the vibe they're giving off about it.
Yeah. Everything that this game has going for it, I'm excited about.
Worth pointing out too, because you just mentioned Metacritic blessing Eddie Oya Jr. Mm-hmm. On the Kinda Funny Gamescast Cyberpunk 2077 review, we asked you, Mr. I'm so great at guessing Metacritics. I kick the shit out of Greg when we do the Metacritic bets on PS I Love You XOXO. We said, what do you think the Cyberpunk Metacritic is going to be come Friday? What did you say?
I said 90.
Do you want to know what it is?
What is it?
It is 90 on the nose. I hate you.
Let's go.
Fucking hate so you. I don't know.
Jesus.
This time traveling future class bitch. You know what I
wait.
Mean?
I can't wait for the Metacritic predictions for Gamescast probably at the beginning of next year. Like,
we did at the beginning of this year, didn't we? Didn't Tim say that?
We did. No, yeah, we did at the beginning.
We haven't gone through them yet. I don't fucking.
We haven't gone through them. Maybe I nailed all of them, but I have the feeling that I'm not going to be as accurate as I have been for the last month.
Your powers have only grown. Your powers have only grown.
My powers have grown, and so, like, this next one, I'm ready because I think I got the stuff now.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if you got the stuff. We'll see if you got the stuff.
Oh, I got the stuff.
What's your next one? What's your fourth? Yeah, what's your fourth favorite thing?
My fourth one is It Takes Two from Haze Light.
Ooh, It Takes Two, baby.
Joseph Ferris' game, new game that he showed off. I actually pulled an excerpt here from the PlayStation blog because Joseph Ferris did a whole write-up there. He mentions, after the success of A Way Out, we definitely wanted to create another co-op game. I think co-op games are very underrated for telling strong stories. There's so much to be explored, especially from a narrative perspective. It Takes Two is literally a romantic comedy, which isn't that usual in video games. It's about a small family, a little girl, Rose, the father, Cody, and the mother, May. Cody and May are about to separate. Rose is devastated about it, of course. So she creates these two dolls representing her parents that magically come to life in this fantastical world. And like, as I was watching the trailer, I didn't put all that together. But reading that and then like seeing the context of the trailer and how ridiculous the game looks and how it seems like it almost, this game seems A Way Out-ish in the way that A Way Out was this co-op experience, right? 5 hours where every scene you're doing something different from the next. This seems like that, but in a more fantastical sense, which I think is going to be really fun. But then with that added layer of, by the way, the core of this story is it's a kid going through their parents' divorce. Like, that's very like deep in a way that I'm excited to see tackled. Like, I want to see how Haze Light Studios and Joseph Ferris translate this story into a thing, into a game that feels like it is lighthearted and whimsical and fun. And so this looks really cool to me.
This seems like the culmination of everything they've learned from Brothers in a Way Out. Because I would say, Haze Light, I love, and I don't think I necessarily love their games every time. Like, I platinumed A Way Out with Kevin. I enjoyed A Way Out, but I didn't find it like, the whole time I wasn't riveted, right? Like, I enjoyed myself. Yeah. It was a fun afternoon we spent together. And then it was like, all right, cool. And I never really thought about A Way Out again. But I liked the idea that they were making this co-op game. I liked the idea that they were experimenting with it. Same thing with Brothers, obviously, and the experimentation and the co-op stuff they did there. Looking at this trailer, hearing the story, like, I feel like this is the one I'm going to connect with the most so far. Because the story sounds awesome, and then the gameplay itself looks really engaging, interesting, different. I could see me and Jen playing this. I could see me and Kevin playing this. I could see, like, wrapping it up in this book and having this narrator and having, I assume, it's going to be like, we usually say this for visuals. I have a feeling it's going to be like narratively structured like a Pixar movie where we're going to get these cutscenes of these characters, these dolls getting into the next thing. Oh my God, then we have to get them out of that situation. Then you get the cutscene again to move it on, right? And see what's happening with the daughter who doesn't want them to get divorced or whatever. It sounds fucking rad.
Yeah, and this, I think, comes back a little bit to the Scavengers Housemarque conversation of, this seems like the type of game that Joseph Ferris just really wants to make. Like, he's been making these co-op games with these, weird, fun, or non-standard, different stories and different types of gameplay. And, you know, it doesn't strike me as the thing that sells. Like, A Way Out, I don't think, sold amazingly for an EA-published game, but the fact that he still gets to do them, and the fact that, like, they're not the greatest things in sliced bread. Like, I'm with you that A Way Out wasn't necessarily, like, you know, a work of art or a masterpiece, but it was still fun. Like, it was still a good time, and I think that those types of games are definitely worth existing and worth being out there for people to check out and be like, oh, yeah, this is a fun thing to play with my partner or friend or roommate or whoever. The fact that he still gets to keep making these games, I think, is really cool.
My final one is an obvious one. It's Mass Effect will return. Of course, we got a trailer last night that was kind of the walkthrough, starting with our humanity of space travel and then getting into first contact. Then we got a blown up mass relay. And then we got to see Liara, we assume, out there picking up an N7 like badge, cleaning it off, smiling. We saw so many people have pointed out over, in the distance, there's three other characters that look like Mort and a whole bunch of different people, Grunt and all that. We're going long already, obviously, 44 minutes on just this, and we still have two other news stories and everything else to get to. One of the questions wrote in that is going to get cut here, but to be boiled down, is like, what do we, how fucked is BioWare? Like, do we trust them? Like, they did it. Hey, Dragon Age is going to be at the Game Awards. And then it was just another like narrated animated thing. And then, hey, here's a Mass Effect teaser. And it's like, I think that's a conversation for almost a different day where we're talking about Game Awards and hype and fucking cool shit. I think at that point, I want to check for the day the conversation of Anthem, Casey Hudson leaving, the other guy whose name is escaping me leaving, Dragon Age.
Is it Mark Duraw or something like that?
Yes. Andromeda, right? Like, it's like, let's check all that and just be like, this was a cool trailer. Like, this was a cool trailer. This was a hype final trailer before the Game of the Year thing. I enjoyed Mass Effect so much after Mass Effect 2, but like, I saw this and I was like, all right, yeah, like, this was cool. We got those reactions. And it was that thing of from the very beginning in our reaction, I'm like, it's Mass Effect. And then it was like, wait, no, it isn't. Then is it? It is. It isn't. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah.
Is it Metroid? Because it looked like Metroid, like the last Metroid reveal.
Just give up, Tim. It's never going to be Metroid.
I'm definitely more than happy for Mass Effect fans. I think this is very exciting, and I think this is it's a really awesome promise that Mass Effect is probably going to continue, or at least they're planning for Mass Effect to continue Andromeda. Because I think that's reassuring to Mass Effect fans. I do think this announcement is ridiculous because they're working on coming off of Mass Effect Andromeda, which is a failure for them. They're working on coming off of Anthem, actually, because I forgot Anthem.
Which is a failure for them.
Coming off of Anthem, which is a failure for them. They're working on Anthem next, which I know is a small group of people over at BioWare. They're working on Dragon Age 4. They're working on Mass Effect Legendary Edition. And now they just announced Mass Effect, the next Mass Effect. And Mass Effect will continue, I guess I'll just call it. And that's ridiculous. this very much has the vibes to me of, hey, let's announce this just to reassure fans that this is a thing that exists. It reminds me of Bethesda announcing Elder Scrolls 6. And that's
Scott and Starfield. And yeah.
Yeah, and Starfield. And Starfield is, I assume, their next game. That's going to come before Elder Scrolls 6. And so I expect that game, 2022, 2023 for Starfield? And which would probably put Elder Scrolls. We'll see.
I'm slowing down the conversation. Just go. Sorry, I'm getting it.
But that would probably put Elder Scrolls 6 at 2026, 2027?
Mass Effect, 2025, if you're lucky.
If you're lucky, if they're working on them in tandem and they've figured out some wizardry. Mass Effect is very much the same thing. You're not going to see the next Mass Effect until 2026, 2027, maybe? The game is far down the line, and I think it is ridiculous of them to announce it so early. Exciting for Mass Effect fans to know that it's still being worked on and they have a future for
it. Of course.
But in terms of what's on the slate, let's do one thing at a time here.
Just a hype trailer is all I'm saying. Just a cool Game Awards hype moment.
Yeah, for sure.
What's your final pick for something that was awesome at the Game Awards? Remember, this is not a comprehensive list by any stretch of the imagination, ladies and gentlemen. I urge you to run over to IGN.com where you can read their Game Awards 2020, every game announcement and reveal from Felicia Miranda.
I'll split for what to include as my last one. I have Disco Elysium written down because that's coming to consoles, and I think that's very exciting. I can't wait to play that game. But it just occurred to me that we got the trailer for Crimson Desert yesterday.
Yeah.
And I don't have much to say about it because I don't know much about that studio.
Gorgeous looking, though.
But yeah, that game, the trailer that they showed for that game is very gorgeous and actually looks like a next-gen thing. And so I don't have much to say about it again, but it looks cool. If you haven't seen the trailer for Crimson Desert, I'd say check it out. Looks awesome.
Okay.
And Kevin's showing it here. It's basically like a fantasy.
When we were narrating the trailer, because this is one of the parts where we clicked over to Marvel, I think it was like, I was like, oh, it looks like a gorgeous fucking Assassin's Creed. But then eventually he's riding dragons at the end. You're like, holy shit, fuck.
I was like, whoa. Yeah, and you look at the combat is very fast, almost like hack and slashy in a way that I like. And the colors, the environments, the animations in the environments, and how you see leaves flowing and the particle effects for the snow and all that stuff. And yeah, you see here that he's flying on the dragon. All this shit looks beautiful and fantastic in a way where I'm sure when we get the final game, probably won't look as great as the trailer, obviously, but for what this gameplay trailer is, I think it looks really cool.
This looks so good. It looks like a game that we're never going to get, right?
Or it's exactly. Just it looks like I compared it to the Unreal Engine 5 demo yesterday. It gives me those vibes of, this doesn't seem like a real game. This seems almost too good to be true.
All right. That's where you're leaving it?
Yeah, that's where I'm going to leave it. Crimson Desert.
Okay. I think it looks great. Can't wait to see more of that either. Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know, you can go to patreon.com/. You understood because I say it every day, but let me try that again or actually say all the syllables. If you didn't know, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames to be part of the show with your questions, comments, concerns, Patreon producers, and so much more. Plus, more importantly, you can go there to get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, Greg Way, today's first sponsor is Quip. There are only two types of people in this world. Those of us who brush and floss every day and those who just might start, thanks to Quip's new refillable floss pick. You know Quip, the electric toothbrush. You hear me talk about it all the time, but it's their sleek, reusable floss pick that you'll want to use next. The durable handle is easy to guide, restrings with a click, and comes with a compact mirrored dispensing case for on the go. Pair your floss with the perfect electric toothbrush for adults and kids. Quip has the simple guiding features you need, like timed sonic vibrations with guiding pulses to help you brush better. You can personalize your routine with over 9 premium brush colors, plus anti-cavity toothpaste for every taste in mint and watermelon. And now you can get amazing rewards just for brushing better every day. Quip's smart electric toothbrush connect to the free Quip app, and you can earn amazing rewards like free products and discounts. I am doing that right now. I have more than 200 points saved up already, blessing. So in your face.
Oh.
Quip also delivers brush heads, floss, and toothpaste refills every 3 months from $5. Shipping is free, and you can save money and skip the store. Bring delight to your everyday brushing and join the over 5 million mouths brushing with Quip starting at $25. And if you go to getquip.com/games right now, you'll get your first refill free. That's your first refill free at getquip.com/games. GETQUIP.com/games. Quip. Better oral made simple. Well, better oral health made simple. But I guess in general, if you just want to shorten it, it'd be, overall, it's probably helping with your oral. Speaking of oral, Gregway, up next is Trojan Tantrix Pleasure Sleeves. While your hand gets it done, and frankly, it's always going to be there, there's a new way, and dare we say, even more exciting way to masturbate. Introducing Trojan Tantrix, the new sex toy for the boys. Introducing the new Trojan Tantrix Pleasure Sleeve, a handheld, soft, textured sheet. Like really, really soft. Tantrix is designed to enhance the sensation of each stroke with textured ridges and max pleasure. Since it fits in your hand, you already know how to use it. You just do what you would normally do. You have full range of motion so you can adjust your grip and pressure to stimulate where you want. Use with a water-based lube. Use Tantrix for a solo pleasure to take pleasure into your own hands or spice up the elusive hand job and use it with your partner. With Trojan Tantrix, there's a better way to do it. So head to Amazon, Walmart, or walmart.com to make masturbation so much more.
Tim Geddes really enjoys using the Tantrix he mentioned on the show.
On the Gary Witt episode this week, we had Tim actually call in, and he drafted an email to them to get us all the sleeve because we all need to try.
Thank God!
This. Don't worry, we're gonna get it.
I keep asking. I want to make sure. Like, I don't want to be like a bother when I ask you guys for stuff, but this one is very important to me. I really want a Tantrix.
We gotta get this thing. And the final sponsor of the day is BetterHelp. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online. There is a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free of charge. Free of charge to change counselors if you need. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted each day. Visit betterhelp.com/games. That's better, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. Special offer for Kinda Funny Games daily listeners. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/games. Number 2 on the Roper Report. Let's talk about Game Awards winners. This one we go probably a little bit quicker for them. Obviously, Blessing, The Last of Us dominated. The Last of Us took home the following awards: Game of the Year, Best Game Direction, Best Narrative, Best Audio Design, Innovation and Accessibility, Best Action Adventure. From there, Best Art Direction went to Ghost of Tsushima. Best Score and Music went to Final Fantasy. Best Performance went to Laura Bailey as Abby in The Last of Us Part 2. Games for Impact went to Tell Me Why. Best Ongoing is No Man's Sky. Best Indie is Hades. Best Mobile is Among Us. Best Community Support, Fall Guys. Best AR/VR is Half-Life Alyx. Best Action was Hades. Best Role Playing, Final Fantasy VII Remake. Best Fighting, Mortal Kombat 11. Best Family, Animal Crossing. Best Sim/Strategy, Flight Simulator. Best Sports/Racing, Tony Hawk, Pro Skater 1 and 2. Best Multiplayer Among Us. Best Debut Game, Phasmophobia. And Content Creator of the Year was Valkyrie. Any surprises there for you?
Not really. I think the one surprise, and it was also a surprise for Sean Murray, was No Man's Sky. And so congratulations to them. But yeah, everything else here, like the more I think about my predictions for Game of the Year during our Gamescast episode, the more disappointed I get in myself for not predicting some of these ones. Like I went Hades for Game of the Year for my prediction, and I probably should have just went The Last of Us because The Last of Us had way more of a chance. But I figured, like, you know, maybe this is the year that like the Dark Horse takes it and like, you know, the critics really like speak out and push for you know, like the more like the less triple A game, obviously, like Hades being a literal indie game. You know, I was thinking it'd be like the Untitled Goose Game thing of, hey, we think this game does something quirky and cool, let's push it, yeah, let's promote it. But
that'll be Dice, man.
Last of Part Two is The Last of Part Two, and so yeah, it doesn't surprise me that it swept when it came to all the things it was nominated for.
Suck Sandwich writes into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames just like you can. It says, happy Friday, KFGD crew. Now that we've got the Game Awards over, I wanted to ask something that I've seen a lot of debate around. Are the Game Awards inclusive enough? What I mean by that is, does the show do enough both in terms of spotlighting artists and creators across a broad spectrum and showcasing truly all the best games that the year had to offer and not just the ones that got the most press? Last of Us Part 2 swept both the Golden Joysticks and now the Game Awards, and I've seen a lot of complaints that many other great games were snubbed because of this. I've seen a lot of people complain that other nominees like Hades and 13 Sentinels got hung out to dry alongside games like Paradise Killer and Umurangi Generation, which weren't even nominated. Did The Last of Us 2 steamroll the competition because it had the biggest budget, or were the awards justified? Could a big show like the Game Awards do a better job highlighting a broader spectrum on creators, artists, and games? Greg, I feel like you might have some insightful input, since Kind of Funny is a judge and you get to see how the sausage is made a little. Suck Sandwich. Well, thank you, Suck Sandwich. It's an interesting question. It's a big question, obviously, but I think it all goes back to the fact, like, you know, I don't like this idea here. Did Last of Us Part 2 steamroll the competition because it had the biggest budget, or were the awards justified? In my professional opinion, which is, you know, take it with a grain of salt, you play video games and have opinions too, the awards were 100% justified. The Last of Us Part 2 is a work of art, is a masterpiece of a game. I think it's phenomenal on all the reasons you've heard me say a million times over. That doesn't take away from a game like Hades being phenomenal. It doesn't take away from a game like 13 Sentinels being phenomenal. It doesn't take away from Paradise Killer, a whole bunch of indies I haven't heard of or haven't played or whatever. I think the thing is that this is always going to be a subjective art form. And so it is always going to be what Game of the Year means to you. As soon as Last of Us won last night, I saw peers in this industry being like, oh God, I can't fucking believe this one. And Hades didn't get this, and yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. And it's that thing of like, yep, but the peers in the industry voted otherwise. Like, there was a vote between these outlets. And granted, again, I'm saying it myself. Like, what does my fucking opinion matter over yours? You know, whatever. Like, opinions are opinions are opinions. But the outlets that are a part of the Game Awards, like, you know, the IGNs, the GameSpots, the Kind of Funnies, the Giant Bombs, all these different people, like, this is how the vote went. They think this is the best game. And that starts from a different place of, you know, internally, you want to talk how the sausage is made, right? Like, Jeff says it's time for us to nominate. I put out the nominations to all of Kind of Funny, and we all go in there and just list games, and then you second them or third them or fourth them, right? So you understand that, like, no, I back this decision. And then the top five of those get sent to Jeff as our nominations. Then they get compared, they get put into the pot with everybody else's nominations, and the nominations that have the most nominations get on the nominations. Then it's voting and yada, yada, yada. And so the fact that these AAA big games rise to the top like that, like, I don't like the argument that that happens because they have the biggest marketing budget or they have the most, like, that's not to take away from the indies that are doing something incredible, but it is to say that, like, we shouldn't shit on these games to build those up. It's the same thing of, like, why the Oscars, right, expanded their, and I don't do entertainment, Kevin, you can correct me if you know it, why they expanded to having more Best Picture nominees, right, so that they could make more room for not just the artistic stuff, but the things that people play the most of, and not to make it such a ivory tower kind of thing. Blessing, am I wrong? This is your, you know, first year in the industry or whatever. Like, am I off base?
I mean, I think to some extent it's a popularity contest. Like, so many of the game of the year nominees, like, they're nominees because more people played them, right? Like, I could very, very easily hear the argument that 13 Sentinels had a better narrative than a lot of the other games that are nominated, but most people didn't play 13 Sentinels. Most people didn't play Paradise Killer. Like, and these are games that I like. These are games I think are awesome games. But when you talk about the reality of games that are going to get nominated and the games that are going to win, it's going to be the games that rise to the top. And like, you know, the question mentions because it had the biggest budget, or like were the awards justified, right? Like, Last of Us Part 2 had the biggest budget because Naughty Dog has built themselves as a studio, and like they've done that by making great games over the year and being owned by Sony, right? And having this support, and like it's this weird kind of, yeah, that's gonna rise to the top. Like, yeah, that's gonna get end up getting nominated because they're going through this process that's kind of proven, and that is very hard to knock down if you're a game like Hades. And I think it's tough because as much as video games are art, and as much as video games are stories, and as much as video games are a bunch of different things, they're also technology. And so like when you have a high budget to work on this piece of technology, like, yeah, Last of Us Part 2 is going to have the best animations and the best facial capture and the best or the most refined combat, right? Or the least bugs, because they have all this budget and all this stuff to work with. And that doesn't take I don't think any of the things that I'm saying takes away from the fact that, yeah, Last of Us Part 2 is one of the Game of the Year nominees and is Game of the Year. Like, Last of Us Part 2 for me is one of my favorite games of the year. And that's just because all the things that I mentioned, all the things that are setting it up for success, all that stuff worked for it. And so it's a weird conversation. Like, I don't know what the fix is here, if there is a fix. I think maybe a fix is nominate more games so we can have more variety. But that said, you look at Game of the Year and we have Animal Crossing and Hades and Last of Us and Final Fantasy VII and Ghost of Tsushima, and that is a good variety of games. Like, all those games are different in many ways, right? And I could have seen easily Among Us get nominated for Game of the Year. I think that was very
if
much
if you expanded it, I definitely think it would have. Yeah.
And if you look at that, those games all define the year. Like, that is a diverse portfolio of games right there. And I think that very much exemplifies, hey, yeah, video games are varied and different, and this year was awesome, and you know, it is what it is.
I think, sorry,
go for it.
I was going to say, I think one of the things that, you know, if you're somebody who wants more diversity in the way we're talking in terms of games nominated and stuff like that, obviously, because diversity is a big issue in the industry. But if we're talking about games nominated and winning awards, I think then it also is branching out to different sites. Like, Game Awards are the mainstream Game Awards, so like for the industry, right? So like, clearly, yeah, like if you're going to get that many people together, the stuff that is going to be mostly played is going to be there. But if you wanted to know like really the best RPG or the best PlayStation game or whatever, I think, and that's wishy-washy right now because I would still argue The Last of Us, but you know what I mean, if you're looking for like genre specific, I would look for genre specific podcasts and websites that are doing those kind of things, that have a different angle on it, rather than, it's like what I always argue when people want to, you know, if you're trying to do what we do, don't try to be IGN, try to be you. Try to, you know, what do you love? Make a site and a podcast about that rather than try to be everything.
Yeah, the bummer I have in terms of the categories and picks is categories like Best Fighting Game, where the winner was very easily predicted as Mortal Kombat, because for the folks who you're reaching out to submit votes for Best Fighting Game, like, you're still reaching out to the same panel of judges that did Game of the Year, right? And for folks like, you know, IGN might be a bad example because I'm sure IGN has fighting game people, but for the wide swath of jury that you're reaching out to, like, most of them don't have the knowledge of what's going on in the fighting game community. And so like, it was very obvious that Mortal Kombat was going to win that vote. And I would say Mortal Kombat is deserving because they did put out a great update this year. But even so, like, for the fact that One Punch Man was on that list, I think is just ridiculous. The fact that I can't remember what other games on the list, but that list didn't seem very representative of fighting games in 2020, and at least like the good fighting games in 2020.
And that's why I think you go to a fighting game website if you wanted to see like that detailed discussion of it, right? And I think even here, which is weird, is like, Kind of Funny takes it very seriously of like, hey, like, idea is like, if you didn't play for nominations, if you can't nominate three games, don't nominate anything, and then also don't vote in it when you get there if you haven't played three games, right? Like the idea of like play the majority of this category, know something about this. Don't just nominate to nominate. And so for us, we leave also, you know, the sports section and then fighting games, I think, or maybe this fighting games with you this year, we might've entered it, but normally
yeah,
it would be
I think playing. Me and Imran voted in fighting games.
And so that was the thing of like, for all of us then putting together our ballot to, or when we got the ballot back from Jeff to then vote on it and I put it out to everybody, like there's a sixth option on every one of the votes that is I didn't play enough of these to do it. And you would hope that, yeah, if you go to whatever other site, if there is a champion there for fighting games, they are saying, guys, this is the fighting game. This is what we should vote for. And that you'd believe that person. And that's how you would go. It's a big question. And so I know we're, you know, jumping around, but I don't like when it sounds like it's just like, oh, well, they won because of it. It's like, oh, no, they're a great game too. But that's another conversation for another time. Speaking of, number three on the Roper Report, NPD for November 2020 is out. I'm, of course, reading from Jeffy Grub over at GamesBeat. We're going to go through this one lightning quick, just give you the super top-level stuff. PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X launched last month, and they helped set a new November record, according to industry tracking firm, the NPD Group. But the fever for the next-gen consoles didn't cool off demand for the Nintendo Switch. Quote, PlayStation 5 was November's best-selling hardware platform in consumer spending, while Nintendo Switch led the market in units sold, said Matt Piscatella, an NPD analyst. Nintendo Switch has been the best-selling hardware platform in units sold for a record 24 consecutive months. PlayStation 5 achieved the highest launch month unit and dollar sales for a video game hardware platform in U.S. history. The records were previously held by the PlayStation 4, which debuted in November 2013. So Matt Piscatella went on to talk about this, that if they could have put more out, they would have sold even more, but obviously hampered by what this is. On the game side, your top three are number one, Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War, number two, Assassin's Creed Valhalla, number three, Marvel's Spider-Man Miles Morales. Jeffy Grubgrub and Matt Piscatella have information on that. Quote, Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War was November's best-selling game and instantly becomes the best-selling game of 2020 year to date, said Matt.
Wow.
Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War represents 2020's biggest launch. The title ranks first on both PlayStation and Xbox platforms for the month of November, as well as year to date, end quote. Black Ops Cold War continues a streak for Call of Duty, which always outsells the competition during its debut month. Quote, this is the 13th consecutive year a Call of Duty game has ranked as the best-selling game of its release month, Matt said. Jumping to Assassin's Creed, quote, Assassin's Creed Valhalla debuted as the second best-selling game of November and is the seventh best-selling game year-to-date. Assassin's Creed Valhalla achieved the highest launch month sales for an Assassin's Creed franchise title since the release of Assassin's Creed 3 in 2012. Fucking huge. And then jumping to Spider-Man, quote, Marvel's Spider-Man Miles Morales was the third best-selling game of November while ranking second on PlayStation platforms. Launch month sales of Marvel's Spider-Man Miles Morales are the second highest amongst superhero games on the PlayStation platforms in U.S. history, trailing only the September 2018 sales of Marvel's Spider-Man, end quote. Beyond those top three, it goes number four, Madden NFL 21, number five, NBA 2K21, number six, Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity, number seven, Watch Dogs Legion, number eight, Animal Crossing New Horizons, number nine, FIFA 21, and then number 10, Demon Souls popping in there. In terms of another new game, number 13 was Just Dance 2021. Blessing.
Greg.
I can't wait for Call of Duty to be the 14th consecutive year where it just kicks the shit out of everybody and it's release month. But next year's so far away. If I wanted something more immediate, say what came to the mom and grab shops, where would I go?
You'd go to the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Yeah.
Blessing, I'm going to do out today and then you do new dates because there's just, I've been talking a lot and I feel like especially on the run on out
great.
Of here, okay?
You're doing great.
Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, you're doing good. You're doing good.
Out today, Panzer Dragoon Remake Xbox One, Alba, a wildlife adventure on PC, Medal of Honor Above and Beyond on VR, My Hidden Things on Xbox One, Sinker 2 Xbox One, Cyber Crush 2069 on PC. Get it. That's just fucking awesome. Get it. Get that SEO. Warplanes, WW1, Sky Aces on Switch, Autumn's Journey on Switch, Splashy Cube on Switch, Persian Knights 2, The Moonlight Veil on Switch, the second Star Wars Squadrons holiday update is now live. The latest update brings the highly requested B-Wing Starfighter for the New Republic and TIE/D Defender multi-role Starfighter for the Empire to the game. With this update, Motive Studios is also launching custom matches. Mork Red is now available on Xbox Game Pass, Xbox Series X/S, Xbox One, Windows 10, and Steam. The Swedish chef from the Muppets is now an Overcooked as a playable chef. Shady Part of Me is now available on PC, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Nintendo Switch. And then Master Chief's in Fortnite. Blood Gulch is in creative mode in Fortnite this weekend. And Daryl and Michonne are coming soon to Fortnite. Those were more Game Award announcements.
And then new dates for you. We got Fall Guys Ultimate Knockout Season 3 that launches on December 15th. The Callisto Protocol aims to put horror back in survival horror in 2022. Sea of Solitude, the director's cut at the Game Awards 2020, that's scheduled for launch on March 4th, 2021. The Elder Scrolls Online Gates of Oblivion, the global reveal event, is scheduled for January 21st, 2021. Super Meat Boy Forever is coming to the Epic Game Store on December 23rd, 2020. Returnal is coming March 19th, 2021 for PS5. The Nintendo Switch is getting Ghost and Goblins Resurrection on February 25th, 2021. Outriders is coming out February 2nd, 2021. Look forward to that. That game is really cool. Me and Andy previewed it. I have good things to say about it. It's coming to PS4, PS5, Xbox One, Xbox Series X, and PC. Forza Horizon 4 is getting a Cyberpunk 2077 vehicle. It'll be available for free starting on December 11th. Hood Outlaws and Legends is launching on May 10th, 2021 for PS4, Xbox One, PS5, Xbox Series X, and PC. Nier Replicant is coming April 23rd. And then GameSpot, Winter has come to... this is from GameSpot. Winter has come to Destiny 2 as its annual Dawning event will kick off from December 15th and run until January 5th. Like previous Dawning adventures, new seasonal weapons and armor will be made available, allowing you to dress your guardians up in snazzy festive gear before you head out to slay gods. And then It Takes Two is coming to consoles and PC on March 26th, 2021.
Deals of the day. Xbox Game Pass cannot be stopped as the greatest deal in possibly gaming history. Coming soon, you have The Elder Scrolls V Skyrim, Android and console, Neoverse console, Killer Queen Black console, Among Us PC, Cyber Shadow console and PC, The Medium console and PC, Yakuza 3, 4, 5, and 6, well, Yakuza 3, 4, 5 remastered console and PC, Yakuza 6, The Song of Life console and PC. As we already talked about up there, Mork Red is Android console and PC. It's out now. Elder Scrolls Skyrim, which I mentioned above too, is out December 5th. Among Us is December 17th. Beholder Complete Edition is Android and console December 17th. Code Vein is December 17th on Android and console. The Dark Pictures Anthology Man of Medan is PC December 17th. Monster Train is console December 17th. MotoGP 20 is December 17th. My Friend Pedro is Android December 17th. Neoverse, which I mentioned up there, Android and console December 17th. And Wilmot's Warehouse console and PC December 17th.
I like that God you called it Elder Scrolls
V. I'm just trying to go. You know what I mean? I'm just trying to run.
Yeah, I'm just trying to go through it now because I like that idea that it's not a five, it's a V. V has come too. Wake up, Samurai V.
I'm hoping I get to that scene today, but I digress. Ladies and gentlemen, we ask the people watching live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames to go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong and tell us what we screw up as we screw it up. Good news, blessing, we are fine. Just a bunch of editorializing in here that I've already cleaned up. Hey. So we nailed it. Don't worry about it. Who would have thought? Nailing it right here. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. Of course, the show isn't over. You can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames to get the post show we're about to do. If you don't want to go there, though, you have to wait till next week when it will be the final week of Kind of Funny Games Daily for the year 2020. Monday, it'll be me and Tim. Tuesday, it'll be Blessing and Imran. Wednesday, it'll be me and Gary. Thursday, it'll be me and Tim. Friday, it'll be me and Blessing to close out Kind of Funny Games Daily for 2020. Remember, if you're watching live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames right now, you can stick around. Screencast is up next, talking about that new Mandalorian episode. I'm sure a bunch of other stuff, a whole bunch of Disney stuff and MCU and all that jazz from yesterday. But we got a post show to do. So until next time, it's been a pleasure to serve you.